ॐ ब्रह्मानन्दं परमसुखदं केवलं ज्ञानमूर्तिं द्वन्द्वातीतं गगनसदृशं तत्त्वमस्यादिलक्ष्यम् एकं नित्यं विमलमचलं सर्वधि साक्षिभूतं भावातीतं त्रिगुणरहितं सद्गुरुं तं नमामि। ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ हरि ओम् एव्रिबडि। Today we start another beautiful chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Every chapter is beautiful. I have always told you that Bhagavad Gita is my favorite text so far amongst all the scriptural texts that I have studied. But in the Bhagavad Gita, this chapter is my favorite chapter as well. And the reason that this chapter is my favorite is because this is the one that I have. The principles in these chapter is what I have always tried to follow and am following to this day. So my constant battle or my constant sadhana is to rise to the sattva guna and stay there. That's what our job is. We go from tamas to rajas to sattva and we stay there. And we wait for Bhagwan's grace. Up to there is our self-effort. After that, it is grace. So the more we stay in sattva or try to stay in sattva because we fall, the better it is for us. And therefore, this is my favorite chapter. And I have always told you that this is the final chapter in which Bhagwan gives the gunatita lakshana. He started with Sthita Prajna Lakshana in chapter 2, which was through Jnana, and then the Bhakta Lakshana in chapter 12, which is Bhakti Yoga, and this is a Gunatita Purusha Lakshana, which is Karma Yoga. So those of us who are Karma Yogis, who are more balanced in head and heart, we need to pay close attention to this chapter. Okay? So with that, the obstacles, it is said that there are three obstacles in reaching the self. So self-realization has got three obstacles. And the three obstacles are mala, vikshepa, and avarana. Mala, dirt. Mala comprises of the shadripu, the six impurities of the mind. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, and matsarya. So there is desire, there is anger, there is greed, there is delusion, and then there is egoism or pride, and then jealousy. So these are the shadripus. They are known as the six waves of the mind. They fall under mala. Vikshepa is the agitations of the mind. The more mala is there, the more impurities are there in the mind, there will be more agitations in the mind as well. So they are directly related. Less impurities, less agitation. More impurities, more agitation. And the final one is avarana or veiling. So veiling of what? Veiling of our true nature. So the dirt, impurities in the mind create agitations. And because of these two, there is a veiling on our so-called intellect where we cannot recognize ourselves to be the Supreme Self. If there are three obstacles, then the Shruti has to give us three paths to overcome the three obstacles. Because otherwise, okay, just tell me the obstacles, but don't tell me how to overcome them. Then what is the point? So to overcome these, the Vedas get divided in three parts. One is the Karma Kanda. So Karma Yoga is there given in the Vedas. And Karma Yoga removes mala, impurities. To remove Vikshepa, we have Upasana Yoga. Upasana also falls under action, but it is a mental action. Karma and Upasana both fall under action and cannot be direct cause for liberation. But Upasana is having an understanding of what is meant by the karma which I am doing. So Upasana is slightly higher than just karma or Karma Yoga. And Upasana Yoga will remove Vikshepa, and Jnana Yoga will finally remove the Avaran. And final liberation is achieved through Jnana Yoga. But we can put efforts, and no, we have to put efforts to become qualified for Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga requires a lot of qualification. And to be qualified for that yoga is coming from the word yuj, to join. So that's why there are these three yogas, these three methods to join to the self, which have been given to us. So we can use these three methods. Now, all these methods, they fall under prakriti or maya. Prakriti or maya, which is the material cause of the world. These impurities, the agitations, the avarana, all these three are coming from prakriti. And that is why chapter 14 begins to give us a detailed explanation of prakriti. In short, overcoming these three obstacles means overcoming prakriti. So if I have to overcome prakriti, I should know what prakriti is. How can I overcome something which I don't know what it is? So I have to be able to know what prakriti is. And that's why this chapter begins. The seed of this chapter is in chapter 2. Bhagwan had already told Arjun in chapter 2, verse 45. Traigunya vishaya vedaha nistraigunno gunyo bhavarjuna nirdvandvo nitya sattvastaha niryoga kshema atmavan. This is where is the seed. Chapter 2 has got the seeds of all the other chapters. And this particular chapter, this is the seed. Verse 45 in chapter 2. The Vedas deal with the three attributes. Be you about these three attributes or gunas, O Arjuna, free yourself from the pairs of opposites and ever remain in the sattva, goodness, freed from all thoughts of acquisition and preservation, and be established in the self. So this instruction was given to Arjuna way back in chapter 2. But in that chapter or in any of the following chapters, though prakriti was mentioned, maya was mentioned, a detailed explanation of that those terms was not given. And maybe Arjuna may have even forgotten that this instruction was given, but Bhagwan doesn't forget. Bhagwan doesn't forget what he has said. So he says, I need to explain this to Arjun. And so that's the reason that without even asking a question, Bhagwan has started his discourse in chapter 4. Usually you will find there's a question by Arjun, then Bhagwan is replying. But here, that's what Swami Shwananji also said. Before Arjun asked, he just started. He just wanted to give it out himself. So we don't see that question by Arjun, which usually we see in other chapters. There's a question later on, but not at the beginning of the chapter. Now, this chapter deals with five topics. First is, of course, nature of prakriti, because that's why this chapter has started. He said, rise above the gunas, rise above prakriti, rise above these attributes. And what are these gunas? What is prakriti? What are its attributes? So the nature of prakriti is one topic that this chapter deals with. Second is, how do the gunas bind? because Bhagwan is asking Arjun, and of course asking us to rise above, means there's something not right with the gunas. Now, otherwise, if there was everything was okay with the gunas, then okay, stay in the gunas. Then why rise above them? So obviously they bind. That's what Bhagwan is trying to get at, is that they will bind you to this sansar. They will bind you to this external world. So you need to get above them. And that's why he says, nir yoga kshema atmavan, he said. So rising above, you can be atmavan, van possessor, atma possessor of atma, not possess that, own it as an object, but become atma, become one with atma. So rising above these gunas, you can become. So how do they bind? Unless I know how they are binding, how do I get free myself off of them? So the first thing is nature of prakriti. Second topic is how do they bind? Third topic is how do I know which guna is predominant in me? I might think, okay, that's how it is, you know? So I should do self-evaluation and find out which guna is predominant. And then try, if I'm predominantly sattvic, then no problem, then just stay there. But if there is tamas, then how do I rise from tamas to, which is the predominant guna? And then how do I rise from there? So if I'm tamasic, how do I go to rajas and sattva? Basically, how do I go to sattva? How do I go up to sattva? And then the last topic is, what is the manifestation of these gunas during my life and at the time of death? Because whatever is predominant, I have always told you that none of these three gunas can go to zero, ever, ever. Even for a realized master, there is tamas. That's why he sleeps for 3-4 hours maybe. I sleep for 8 hours. I like to, but I can't anyway. But that's how it is. So tamas is there. Rajas is there, sattva is there always. The percentage of each of these gunas can vary, and that's where we have control. We do not have control over making any of the gunas into zero. It is not possible. So don't even try. Okay. So no point trying something which is totally impossible. But if the percentage can be increased or decreased, then I have a choice there. So I can strive to increase. If I'm told that I should be in sattva guna, then I can strive to increase the percentage of sattva guna. All three will add to 100. But whether I have 50% sattva or 70% or 80% or 90%, that's where I have control. So I can only act in the field where I have control. Where I have no control, there is no point trying, because we are going to fail. You try to make something into zero, I mean the three gunas, it's not going to happen. Okay, so this is why this chapter now begins. And of course, like Swamiji explained, the Sambandha Bhashya, it is called, what we have in between chapters in the Shankar Bhashya, is the Sambandha means connection. What is the connection of this chapter to the previous chapter? So there Bhagwan, Shankaracharya has said that in chapter 13, Bhagwan said, it is because prakriti purusha sanyogat, samyak yoga, joining, yoga joining samyak very well. So prakriti and purusha very well join together, and then this creation happens. But he said only that much. Now there I explained that, I gave you the technical explanation of it, but he didn't explain. We explain, because then Bhagwan Shankaracharya explained to us, so we can explain. But Bhagwan didn't explain. He just said, this is how creation happens. And then he just left it at that. So that is another reason, that Bhagwan is now starting this chapter. So the sanyoga between Purusha and Prakriti, and then a detailed explanation of Prakriti. So the main topic is a detailed explanation of prakriti, but he is also explaining that word sanyoga. How is this sanyoga happening? How is this joining happening? Because I told you, if it's milk and water, yes, sanyoga can happen. Milk and water can mix. But how do you mix wood and water? And that is the question that comes there. Sanyoga with prakriti is inert. Purusha is sentient. How sentient and inert mix? And that's why we technically explain to you that no, it actually doesn't mix. It's only a superimposition. But here Bhagwan gives a different type of an explanation. So we will see that as well. And with that introduction, we begin chapter 14. Atha chatur chatur dashodhyayaha Shri Bhagavan uvacha Param bhuya pravakshyami Jnananam jnanamuttamam Yajnyatva munayas sarve Param siddhimito gataha. I will again declare to you that supreme knowledge, the best of all knowledges, which having known, all the sages have attained the supreme perfection after this life. So first word we take up here is bhuyaha. Bhuyaha means again. And the reason I'm taking up this word is again indicates that Bhagwan has already indicated the nature of the self before. He has. From chapter 7 to chapter 12, it was all a description of the tatpada. I told you, it's tatpada shodhana. So he has told that, but he is now going to tell again. And right here, I want to absolve myself of any kind of repetition. Because if Bhagwan has repeated, then I also have to repeat. So you can't say that, oh, she had already told us this and now she's telling again. But Bhagwan himself is saying that I will tell you again. That's why I'm telling you this. This word is also important here. There is no word which is not important in the Bhagavad Gita. So when Bhagwan says again, means he has told something before, he's going to tell again. Okay. And if he's telling again, I have to explain again. Maybe it will be the same thing. Maybe it will be a little bit different. I don't know. So, Bhuya, what are you going to tell me again, Bhagwan? What are you going to tell Arjun, Bhagwan? Pravakshami, prakarshena vakshami. This vakshami word comes from the verbal root, two verbal roots it has, vacha and vaha. These are two verbal roots. So, vacha, vak, from where comes vak, means speech. Vacha means to speak. So vakshami is to speak. I am going to speak. And then there is vaha also there. Vaha means to carry the load. And because he has put this pra there, prefix, prakarshena vakshami, it is not just that I will tell you, but Bhagwan here is taking on the responsibility of making him understand. This is what Bhagwan is telling him. That I will not just tell you, but it is my responsibility. The load is on my shoulders to make you understand and realize this truth. This is what Bhagwan is now promising him. That's why this pravakshami, because of that, he could have said, I will tell you, vakshami. No, pravakshami, prakarshena vakshami. So vaha comes into picture there, carrying the load. So he's carrying the load, the responsibility of making sure that Arjun is going to understand whatever that he's going to tell. Now, what is he going to tell? Jnananam jnanam uttamam param. So jnananam means among knowledges. Among knowledges? So there are more than one knowledge? Yes, there are more than one knowledges. Because he's saying among knowledge. Among means there's at least two, three, four things, and then among them I'm telling you the best. That's what he's saying, which means that there are knowledges. So we have in the English language, we have good, better, best. And in jnana nam here also, it means there is good knowledge, there is better knowledge, and there is the best knowledge. And here Bhagwan is saying uttamam. So I'm going to tell you the best knowledge, which means there are two other knowledges below it. There is the good knowledge and there is the better knowledge. So what is a good knowledge? Good knowledge is knowledge of the material world. How do I make myself comfortable? How do I make more money? Which funds do I invest in? What do I buy? What do I do? So it is knowledge of the world which can give me comforts, which can give me material wealth, which some people think can give them security. And that's why they do it. They can get security. So that is what this good knowledge is. Okay. The next is better knowledge. So what is better than this good knowledge of this world is knowledge of the higher worlds, heavens. So where we see in Kathopanishad, where Nachiketa asks the guru, Lord Death, please tell me this Agnihotra Yajna, doing which my father can attain the heavens. So these people, they are aware that this material world, outside world, can be enjoyed by the body, but the body is going to die one day. And the jiva, so they are at the level of the jiva, a little bit higher than being at the level of the body. So, but the jiva is going to go somewhere, and I want the jiva to go into higher worlds. And therefore, I need the knowledge of those yajnas, which will take me, and me means not this body. They know the body is going to die. The body is going to be left here, but the jiva can go into heavens. And that's knowledge I want. And now that is a better knowledge than this knowledge of the material world. Why? One thing is that knowledge is more permanent than this. You know, there in eternity also there are there's a hierarchy. Like the ant maybe lives for 100 days, whereas the elephant lives for 100 years. So the ant thinks that the elephant is eternal. It's not a real eternity, but ant thinks that, oh my God, you know, he's so huge. He's like big and he lives for 100 years. So that way. So this world is going to end. Okay, how long will I live? Maybe I'll live for 100 years, 105, 10, whatever. But heaven is way longer than that, because the calculation of time in heaven is different. Also, in this world, the body is there. So the body will have the diseases, decay, the six modifications of the body will be there. And in this world, there is happiness one day, but there can be sorrow some other day. So this people know that. But in heaven, there is no sorrow. That is the difference between heaven and earth, is there is no sorrow. And the body that we get, it said in heaven, is a body which never decays, which never gets diseased, which never gets old. And therefore, there is no death. There's no death in heaven. But what heaven is a point of return. So when your merits get over, then you come back into the mortal world with the same body, with the same modifications, etc., etc. So it appears to be a better knowledge of the heavens appears to be a better knowledge than the knowledge of the world. But then Bhagwan says there is the supreme knowledge, param. Param and uttamam are the two adjectives used for jnanam. Param and uttamam. So param, supreme, has two connotations. One is a point of no return. So this knowledge is better than the knowledge of the heavens, because heavens is a point of return. It'll end. Heaven will end. There is no doubt about it. It'll end. But this knowledge will never end. Means this knowledge means this oneness with the self, if you gain, it will never end. Therefore, this is supreme knowledge. And the other connotation of supreme, param, is that there is nothing beyond this. Like there is not good, better, best, bestest. There's nothing like bestest. This is the best. Uttama. That's it. So uttama means the best. And the reason it is best, because it is a point of no return. And it is a point of cessation of all sorrows and attainment of supreme bliss. And therefore, Bhagwan says, among these three types of knowledges, which knowledge am I going to give you? I'm going to give you the knowledge of the self. Okay, why are you going to give me this knowledge of the self, Bhagwan? What is it going to do to me? Sarve param siddhimito gataha. Knowing this knowledge, gataha, you will go to the supreme abode. You will attain the supreme siddhi. In siddhi, siddhi is supernatural powers. So in Hanuman Chalisa, or if you read Hanuman Ji's this thing, he had this arnima, garima, mahima, blah blah, eight siddhis he had. You know, he could become very small, he could become very big, he could, you know, that's, those are the supernatural powers that he had. So in Vedanta, and those supernatural powers can be had, you do, you know, in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, if you meditate on a particular chakra, each chakra will give you a supernatural power. So if you meditate on the throat chakra, this one here, you will be born as a linguist, in the sense of any language. We see people like that, you know, they're so, so very good at learning new languages. So somewhere in the past, they have done this meditation and therefore they get this siddhi. So these are siddhis, supernatural powers that people have. But in Vedanta, the only siddhi that Bhagwan talks about is reaching him. So it's self-realization. There is no other siddhi. Gurudev also used to say, do not. Because what happens is when you practice meditation, along the way, you will get supernatural powers. But when these supernatural powers are misused, or the supernatural power itself gives you ego, arrogance, and you fall. So that's why Gurudev used to always say that you will get, but ignore those, because those are lower. You are meant to go even higher. People get caught up at that level, and then they don't try to go any higher in meditation, means subtler in meditation, and they fall from there. Because ego develops, I've got such great powers. And that's the problem there. So here, when he said siddhi, this is not any kind of supernatural power which can be used in the world. It is the oneness with the self. Siddhi mito gataha, they go. And how does this person go? Is yajnyatva, having known. So not action, it's not having done. It is having known. And what should be known is this jnanam, which is uttamam and which is param. And who goes there? Munayaha. Munayaha mananashilatvat munayaha. Mananashilatvat means one who is capable of thinking. Because it said yajnatva. So munaya, one who can think in the correct lines. That is the person that will reach this. Not the one who is doing the correct things. Doing is not a direct path to realization. Doing is only removing the impurities from the mind. So doing is necessary, karma is necessary, but final liberation can come only with yajnyatva, having known my real nature. And then we see the Anubandha Chatushtaya here, as Swami Shwananji had also pointed out. Adhikari, Anubandha Chatushtaya, you all know, Adhikari, Vishaya, Prayojana or Hetu, and Sambandha. So Adhikari, who is the qualified student? Vishaya, what is the subject matter of that chapter or that text? And then Prayojana, Hetu, what is the purpose of me studying this text? For this chapter, and what is the sambandha? What is the connection between the vishaya and the hetu? So I have a purpose in mind. Say I want to become a cook. Then, if I'm reading a physics book, is there any connection between physics and my learning how to cook? There is no connection. So there is no point. So I need to have a book which explains different recipes or thing, you know, food items, etc. So here, Munaya is the adhikari, one who is capable of thinking. He is the adhikari. What is the vishaya? Jnanam uttamam param. The vishaya, the subject matter of this chapter is this best and supreme knowledge. Two adjectives used for vishaya, jnanam. And then the third is, what is the prayojanam? Why should I study this chapter? Is Sarve param siddhimito gataha. Because studying this, you will be able to go to the supreme abode. That is the prayojan. That is the hetu. Why is Bhagwan telling Arjun all this? Because he wants Arjun to reach that supreme abode. Why are we studying this chapter? Because we want to reach that. That is the prayojan. I have always told you, you must have a correct why for whatever that you're doing. Whatever it may be, you know. Whatever it may be, that in your head, in your mind, you should be very clear why I'm doing this. It's very, very important. So why am I studying this? So this is the goal. And then that's the goal and it's jnanam uttamam. What is the sambandha? What is the relationship between these two? Knowing this uttamam jnanam, you will go. And that's why Bhagwan has said, pravakshami, it is my responsibility to make you understand. That is what Bhagwan is saying here. Okay. Now, the next verse number 2, he glorifies this knowledge. And the reason that knowledge is glorified is to tweak the interest of the listener. he's used words like, I'll tell you the supreme secret in chapter 9, he said, right? When you say, you're going to tell me the secret, then you're not going to tell anybody else. So the listener feels very encouraged. You know, I'm the special one. I'm being told the secret. So here also he's doing the same thing. He is, not that Arjun was, not alert or anything like that, but still Bhagwan is doing this. Idam jnanam upashritya mama sadharmyam agataah sarge pinopajayante pralayena vyathanti cha. They who, having refuge in this knowledge, have attained to my being, are neither born at the time of creation nor are they disturbed at the time of dissolution. So this is the reason that I'm telling you that when you reach this point, so having refuge in this knowledge here, and knowledge is with a capital K, taking refuge is being that knowledge, being that supreme consciousness, okay? Refuge here. And sadharmya here, it's actually, it means similarity. Sadharmyam, there is a, you know, in bhakti text, bhakti shastra, I think there is a sadharmya mukti. Similar, you look like that Ishta Devata of yours. That's one type of mukti. That's Bhakti Shastra, not Vedanta. So here sadharma is similar, but this is not what Bhagwan means, that he will not become similar to me. Ekatvam is to be understood. He will become one with me. It's like there is sugar we use to sweeten tea or coffee or whatever, and then there is these other sugar substitutes, right? Like equal or whatever. So they are similar to sugar. So that equal, if you add, it will give the sweetness, but it will not give you the side effects of sugar like diabetes. So that's why diabetic people will use equal or all these other kinds of things. So that is similar. That is similarity. But here, that is not what is meant. Though it means, the word means similar, it is not, this is not what Bhagwan is meaning. You will become similar like me. You will be looking like me, not like that. You will be me. Okay. So it's you will attain that oneness with me. Okay. So if I attain oneness with you, then what happens to me? Sargepi na upajayante. During the cycle of creation, at the totality level, cycle of creation, you will not be born again. Because what is happening in the totality, at the end of the four yugas, this whole, you know, universe goes into pralaya. So it merges in the Supreme Lord. And then when Brahmaji opens his eyes, when his one day is over, which is like 100 yugas or whatever it is, we saw that in chapter 8, then all these jivas come back. So at the totality level, that is it. But at the individual level, you don't get born again. That is the point. That's why we say it is a point of no return. Heavens, you will get born again. Or if some of us will not even reach the heavens, so we'll directly be born into this world, this mortal world, this earth. And pralaye na vyathanti cha. So when the time of destruction comes, when the time of dissolution comes at the individual level, when the time of death comes, he will not be disturbed because he knows he is not the body. We see that in the case of King Raja Parikshit. Parikshit was told that his death was after 7 days by the bite of a snake. And so he goes to Shukdevji and he listens to the Bhagavad for 7 days. So even way before that Takshak snake comes and bites him, he had already left the body. He had disidentified with the body. So that death never bothered him. This is what Bhagwan is saying here. This is what will happen if you understand that uttamam knowledge, the supreme knowledge. You will go beyond the cycle of birth and death. And that is what we say is moksha. So you will get moksha. Okay. Now, these next two verses, Bhagwan explains this sayoga. All right. Mama yonir mahat brahma तस्मिन् गर्भं दधाम्यहं संभवः सर्वभूतानां ततो भवति भारत. माय वूम्ब इज द ग्रेट ब्रह्मन्, इन दैट आई प्लेस द जर्म, देन्स ओ भरत इज द बर्थ ऑफ ऑल बीइंग्स. Now here, mama, mine, yonihi mahad brahma, yoni is womb. So how is that sanyoga happening? This is what Bhagwan is explaining in his own words. Mahad brahma here refers to, not brahma here is not brahman. Mama is brahman, okay? But mahad brahma is prakriti, big prakriti, mahat. Mahat is big. And Brahma is that which holds. So it is Prakriti that is holding up this world. Why? Because Prakriti is the one that is making us act. How is this world held? How is my life held or anybody's life held? I do actions. Then they give me results because that is the law of karma. Then that result I have to exhaust. So then I have to take birth again. Because then it's creating vasanas. Those vasanas are giving me birth. So this cycle of birth and death is actually being held by Prakriti. That is what is meant here by Brahma. That which holds. This Prakriti is holding us down here in this world. Because Supreme Reality is the non-doer. It's not doing anything. It doesn't have any gunas. It is beyond the gunas. Action is happening because of the gunas. Gunas belong to Prakriti. So Prakriti is the one. That's why he's calling it Mahat. And the reason he's calling it big is because this Prakriti is giving rise to the entire creation. Like Swami Ishwaranji, he put it in a nice way. He said that this Prakriti, Mahat Brahma, can create all the jivas. So animals, plants, insects, fishes, birds, humans, everything. See, us, our Prakriti means, Prakriti means not nature, but here our Prakriti, a human can give birth only to a human. Very limited powers we have. We cannot just suddenly give birth to an animal or something. Or a cat will give birth to a cat only, no? Dog will, is all these kinds of things we have not seen. No matter how much science and technology is, we have not seen those kinds of things. So that is what is meant by Mahat. Why she called big Prakriti means she is the womb of the entire universe, not just this, all the solar systems and everything has come from her. That's why Mahat and Brahma is, and she is the one that is holding this world together, because everybody is acting and then these vasanas are being created and then birth is happening, death is happening, birth, death, birth, death. This cycle, she is the one that is doing it. But I put my, how can she do it? She's inert. So how does she do it? Is I put my, what is the meaning that I put my seed in there? I reflect in her. That's the reflection theory. So I reflect in her, enlivening her, giving her the power to create. That's why he says that sarva bhutam, and then she gets the power because of my reflection in her, and then she can create. And the reason she can create is because she has got the three gunas. I told you that in the previous chapter also. Why can she create? Because these gunas are required for creation. Every action, we need all three gunas. I have told you this before. Let me remind you. So the body is tamas. So if I'm speaking now, I need the body. I need my vocal cords, which is tamas. The speech itself is rajas. Speech itself is rajas. And the topic, the subject matter that I'm speaking is sattvic. Now here it is sattvic. It could be rajasic. How it could be rajasic, if I was talking about the material world, but the knowledge of the material world is coming from sattva. The knowledge aspect is coming from sattva. So this is rajas backed by sattva. So these three gunas are there, and even a small action like speaking, we need three gunas. Now, Prakriti needs to create the entire universe. Obviously, she needs the three gunas. And that's what we have also seen in, if you want to go for the technical explanation, in Tattva Bodh, Bhagavan Shankaracharya said that from Maya or Prakriti comes the five elements. And then because Maya has got the three gunas, all these elements, five elements, have the three gunas, and then from the total, you know, from the tamasic aspect comes the body, from the rajasic aspect of the gunas come the pranas, from the sattvic aspects comes the mind. So this is how it is happening. So here he reflects. Now this reflection, let me remind you, when this reflection happens in Maya, he is called as Ishvara, and that is the totality. And when that reflection happens in the individual Maya, and the individual Maya is called as Avidya. It is Maya and Avidya, Prakriti, all are synonyms. Vasanas, Vid, in our chart, V, Vasanas, deep sleep, causal body, all these are synonyms. They're same. They're just referred to with different names in different circumstances. Like one single person will be referred to as mom, then that same person will be referred to as a daughter, that same person will be referred to as a wife, that same person will be referred to as a teacher, as a friend, as an enemy, etc., etc., etc. It is the same person. So it's the same Prakriti is there. The reason it is called as Maya at the level of Ishvara is because at level of Ishvara, Ishvara controls Maya fully, completely. And what is meant by control is Ishvara knows who he is. He knows that I am that supreme reality and Maya is under my control. For a jiva, we don't know that we are the supreme reality. And therefore, we are under the control of Maya. And therefore, Maya is called as avidya. Because it is ignorance. At our level, it is ignorance. Okay? So here, this is now he tells how this sanyoga is happening. That is what was from the previous chapter. That I reflect in this Maya, and by my reflection, she gets enlivened, and she is endowed with the three gunas. And because of those three gunas, and because of my enlivening, now she already has the three gunas, but if I don't reflect in her, she cannot create. Santa Naneshwar, he says that Purusha and Prakriti are like husband and wife. So, or Shiva and Shakti, Shiva Shakti or husband wife, even for a common man, this is the example he gives, that the husband will not do any work. Okay, he is not doing any work. Okay, the wife has to do all the work, but she will not do the work until the husband tells her to. So she's under the control of, for a simple, you know, Santa Naneshwar, all simple folks like audience, right? So this is how he used to say. This Purusha understand him to be the husband who doesn't do anything. He'll just sitting there. Okay. The wife can do everything, but she's only looking at the husband. Okay. Shall I act? Okay, fine. Go act. Then she will act. So this is how Purusha and Prakriti is. This is how the Sanyoga is happening. Okay, it is because of that reflection. It's not the seed as normally we have semen and all that. No. Don't have those type of ideas. It's the reflection. Because the reflection is enlivening this Prakriti. And she's Mahat Brahma. Because big, and she's upholding this sansara. She's the one that is upholding it. As soon as we realize that we are that supreme Brahman, we are that non-doer, samsara will end for us. Not physically end, but we will be freed from the thraldom of change. Okay? See, that's why Gurudev has written, and how the union comes to breed our endless sorrows. Because the reflection happens and then that reflection starts thinking that I am it. Reflection identifies with the body, then whatever happens to the body happens to the reflection. That's why the reflection says, I'm fat and thin. I am happy, sad. I am intelligent, dull. As soon as the reflection realizes, and what do I mean by reflection here? Ego. And as soon as we change our mindset to what is happening to my body, it is not happening to me, we will get freed from the thraldom of sorrows. Change is sorrow. Remember that. Always. It stresses us, right? Okay. Any questions? All right. Next verse.
Sarva yonishu kaunteya murtaya sambhavantiyaha tasam brahma mahadyonihi aham bija pradapitaha. Whatever forms are produced, O Kaunteya, in all the wombs whatsoever, the great Brahman is their womb, I seed giving father. The great Brahman here also should be understood as Prakriti and not as Satchitananda Brahma. Okay? Because it is the womb and seed, the seed giving father, I am. So this is whatever form, Murtayaha, when we say form, it presupposes a limitation, right? That's why I say I'm only here. This is what happens to me. Like I say, I'm here. I'm not in the living room even. I'm not, definitely not in India or definitely not somewhere else because I have identified with this form. If I stop identifying with the form and identify with the formless, then I can say, I'm not only here, I'm everywhere. In the entire universe, I am. But I don't say that. I don't feel that because the establishment is not there. So this Murtaya, whatever sarva yonishu here is all the wombs, means what? Cat and dog, animals, reptiles, birds, plants, insects, fishes, bird, whatever is moving is and has a form, right? All of these beings have a form. So sarva yonishu kaunteya murta sambhavantiyaha. So this is how all these murtis is form here, not idol. Form, all these forms have come from all the wombs. That's why she is the great, Prakriti is Mahat. That's why. Mahat Brahma. Great. She's great. That's why she can give rise to all kinds of beings. Not just humans. We can only give rise to a human being. We cannot give rise to anybody else. But she can. So that's why this Mahat. Tasam Brahma Mahat Yonihi. So this is the great womb in which I place my seed. In which I reflect. Enabling this womb to create. Okay, this is how this Sanyoga is happening. And here also, when they see, this is where the, because see, Dvaitins and Vishishtadvaitins, both are believers in Vedas. Huh? Don't think that they don't believe. They are theists like us, Advait Vedanta. But these are some of the verses that they pick up and they say, see, this is what Bhagwan says. He's the father and we are all the children. So it's a matter of interpretation. They look at chapter 7, verse 3. What is that? I'm like the string in the necklace of beads. So they say, see, Bhagwan is different. Bhagwan is the string and we are the beads. That is how they pick up and they interpret. So that interpretation of those words becomes very important. That's why Advaita, there what Advaita Vedanta says, and Santa Naneshwar has put it very beautifully. He says that the bead also is made up of the thread itself. You know, in Bombay, Tripti might know, Hanuman temples, you know, they have that Hanuman thread, black thread. Does anybody know that? It's a thread, black thread, used to get it in the Hanuman temple. And that same thread, they will make a knot, they'll make a few knots, then the thread will go, then they'll make a few more knots. So the thread itself is knotted.
Knotted, yes.
Hana?
Yes. Yes.
Correct? You understand? Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
So, Santa Nyaneshwar used to interpret that beads, Sutre Mani Ganaiva, that is the term Bhagwan uses. Sutre Mani Ganaiva. So, they say Sutra is different, thread is different, money is different. Whereas Santa Nyaneshwar said, no. The Sutra itself is made into the money, and that's why there is Advaita. Whereas Dvaitins say, no. He said it is money. Money is different. Sutra is different. So he is different and we are different. But he is our father. That they agree. There is a relationship between me and God. And this is where it is coming from. Where he says that I am the seed-giving father. They said he is the father. So we don't interpret it that way. We interpret it in the way that Prakriti, ultimately Prakriti is negated, falsified. So there is only the father, means there is only the creator. And we are all one with him. And that's where our journey has to end. That is where we have to be proceeding towards that oneness. Okay. All right. Any questions?
Jayaji,
mm-hmm.
You said that Prakriti is the woman, like she creates everything that is moving and like has a form. But what about the
unmoving?
Unmoving.
Somebody would think of that. No. If you go to the technical explanation, from Maya came all the elements, and elements have the tamasic aspect. From the tamasic aspect, all these inert objects have come. They do not have a subtle body. Therefore, the reflection doesn't happen in them. And therefore, they are called as inert.
Okay.
Don't think that inert has come from somewhere else. Huh? No. No. Then Advaita is negated, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing else. No. Both. But here we are talking. See, he's talking about birth, kind of. Yes. Womb he's talking about, right?
Yes.
So the inert objects have not so-called come from a womb.
Mm.
Live beings have come from a womb or egg or whatever, right? Seed. Plants have come from seeds. So that's why. But inert also has come from. That's why it's supported by the existence principle. Okay. Any questions? Any other questions? All right. I'll read the next verse, but then we can go to it next time. Now he starts up the main theme. There his Gurudev has also written, taking up the main theme of the chapter. The main theme is the gunas. And this, these two verses, 3 and 4, are just an explanation he wanted to, which he didn't tell Arjun in 13. He wants to tell, so he has told. Sattvam rajastama iti guna prakriti sambhavaha nibadnanti mahabaho dehe dehinam avyayam. Purity, passion, and inertia, these gunas, qualities, O mighty armed, born of Prakriti, bind fast in the body, the embodied, the indestructible. So, sattva, purity, rajas, passion, tamas, inertia, gunas, qualities, O mighty armed. He's being referred to as Mahabaho. You are very strong. You are capable of rising above the gunas. This is what Bhagwan is trying to tell him, that you are strong. You have the strength. Don't underestimate yourself. Okay? And they are born of Prakriti. So, sambhavati, right? Prakriti sambhavaha. So, they have come from Prakriti because Prakriti has these gunas. One of the meanings of the word, one meaning is attribute, but the Sanskrit word guna also means rope. Okay, so that's why Sanskrit, they say, is a very refined language. So it can give multiple aspects of the same thing. That's why the guna binds. It's not just how does an attribute bind? No, but if you think of it as a rope, yeah, rope can bind. So that's how this word guna is there. Born of, bind fast in the body, the embodied. So it binds the embodied, which is actually indestructible. See, the embodied, the indestructible. So you said the embodied, comma, the indestructible means what? Means actually it is Satchit Ananda, but it as though, eva. That's why eva word is very important in Advaita Vedanta. These gunas, as though they bind this indestructible, originally very, very free Satchit Ananda. That reflection is now getting bound, and because they are gunas are the rope. Okay, so any questions? We will probably go into a little bit more detail for this one next time. No questions? Great. Okay, so we shall meet next Monday and we'll continue. It's a small chapter, so yeah. All right then.
ओम स्वस्ति प्रजाभ्य परिपालयन्ताम् न्यायेन मार्गेण महिम महिषाः गोब्राह्मणेभ्य शुभमस्तु नित्यम् लोका समस्ता सुखिनो भवन्तु काले वर्षतु पर्जन्यः पृथिवी सस्य शालिनी देशोऽयं क्षोभरहितः ब्राह्मणाः सन्तु निर्भयाः ओम सर्वेषां स्वस्ति भवतु सर्वेषां शान्तिर्भवतु सर्वेषां पूर्णं भवतु सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः सर्वे सन्तु निरामयाः मयाः सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत् ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः Harihi Om. Hari Om, everybody. I shall.